Well, Shannon, another week commences in the midst of the summertime. And I guess there's plenty to discuss. So we will commence to doing that, just the two of us, on this program, absent of any guests to interrupt your thought process mostly.
Well, I'm gonna wait until the last second and ask you two questions. So
The last second?
Yeah. I'll wait till the last second. Yeah. Oh yeah. When you say, well, it's time to go, I said, no, I got one more question for you.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
That just happens on a daily basis.
Just to make you feel like normal, you know?
Well, I think you should take into account the fact that you spent all those years in a truck or in a studio telling people on air, get to break, shut up, no more. And then don't follow any of that advice when you're on here.
This is a podcast, Bob. The rules are there are no rules.
Well, stop thinking that way. There are rules.
No, or there soon will be rules.
Well, there soon will be rules, but that's an announcement we will make at an appropriate time.
Okay.
Or others will make the announcement.
Yeah. Well, so the weekend was an interesting one. So, now, be honest with me. Be honest. Did you watch any Olympics?
Maybe an hour total on the weekend.
Yeah. That's more than me. That's more than me.
Well, it's one of those you flip it on. Traditionally, I don't watch hardly anything on CBC at any time. It's just not in my viewing pattern. So I haven't
gone there. Peter's going to be phoning, you know that, eh? Your old buddy Peter Mansbridge is going to be phoning.
Well, he doesn't have any relationship with CBC much anymore.
Sure he does, but he's hurt because he thinks you never watched him.
Well, no, when he left, that was the end of CBC for me.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I just confess that. So I have watched maybe 5 minutes on CBC, but you know, your pattern is Sportsnet, TSN generally for guys like us, and both of them have Olympics on at night. And so, you know, you flip on and then you go to all the different Sportsnet channels and all the different TSN channels and find out who's doing what. One thing that I found interesting is more often than not, Sportsnet has one event on all channels.
Yeah.
And TSN tends to have two or three at least different events on. I don't understand that. Perhaps you do.
The issue for me is and I'm one of those guys, you touched on it Friday a little bit. I always wonder if it's live or not, and is it real or not? And then when I start to wonder that, what I do is I go to my computer and then I realize it happened 12 hours ago.
Yeah.
And then I get the result and then I watch Ted Lasso. You know?
Well, essentially we're dealing with about a 12 hour time difference. Yeah. So morning is evening and evening is morning. And
today is tomorrow.
Generally are happening overnight or early morning.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
So,
our female swimmers did a fantastic job, which is so nice to see. Good. And that's what Scott Russell said would happen was Penny Oleksiak, although he wasn't talking as much about, Maggie McNeil as he was Kylie Massey and a couple of others. Great to see here's one for you, Bob. It's a fast pool. I mean, how we know that, but if I hear it's a fast pool one more time, it's like Bill Hewitt in the old days used to say the ice at the gardens was always good, which.
As compared to what?
Yeah, exactly. But it's a fast pool. I mean, when they.
I don't even know what would that mean? It's a concrete tub filled with water.
Yeah, I know. But everybody says, it's a fast pool. And
Is some water
more dense than others? Yeah, I know that's what I want to know. Nobody can ever tell me that. But anyway, they're saying it's a fast pool. I mean, in one race, they had three consecutive Olympic records, including Kylie Massey, in the 100-meter back. I mean, that they actually broke the Olympic record in three straight heats.
I assume it's because the swimmers are faster, not because the water is faster.
Oh, no, fast.
But then what do I know?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe it's built on the side of a hill, John, and they're swimming downhill. That's the only explanation I can come up with. All right, let's take a break. We're going to talk about Eichel. We're going to talk about the curious Montreal draft pick, a little bit on the Blue Jays, and maybe some other stuff. We'll be back after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon back with you. And I guess we start with the Jack Eichel story. A still young player who was very highly thought of. Many thought he should have been the number one selection in the draft that year.
Well,
there were people. There was a debate, and I think
not a big one, Bob. Come on, it's Connor McDavid, and then Jack Eichel, and then people in Buffalo said, I mean, if Tim Murray, who had a chance to be the first round and lost the lottery, if he had a chance, he would have taken Connor McDavid.
I'm not disputing that, and in hindsight, that's easy to say. But I have, you know, I recall conversations about, do you take McDavid or Eichel? And the consensus was always McDavid, but it might have been McDavid more because McDavid played in the Ontario Hockey League and got higher profile, higher visibility, and Eichel was much more of an unknown. Mm-hmm. Having said all that, he is a guy of whom Buffalo expected to build the next generation of their franchise. He was of that potential quality. And while he is unquestionably a value and a valuable player, in my mind, I don't know if he's a good player, a very good player, or a great player. I really don't know where he fits. And part of that, at least, is based on whatever the responsibility is of a player of that stature to elevate those around him. Mm-hmm. And maybe in hockey, we overrate that. We certainly understand that in a sport like basketball, for example, a great player can make those around him much better. LeBron James is the perfect example of that. In a sport like football, a great quarterback can take a mediocre offense and elevate it to the point where it is, you know, efficient. Mm-hmm. Can you do that in hockey? Maybe we should start with that question. Are we overvaluing the significant impact that one player can have on a team?
Well, I think if you go back and look at the quote unquote generational players, and I'm going to remove Gretzky from it because there was mitigating circumstances with Gretzky because he played pro before. But Mario Lemieux took 5 years to become a playoff player. 5 years in Pittsburgh before the team made the playoffs with Mario Lemieux there. And we look back now and say Lemieux is one of the greatest of all time, and it's 5 years. You know, Eric Lindros, similar scenario, that the franchise got rebuilt around Eric, but it took time. And so those are the two, in my mind, those are the two comparables from that with that question that you have asked. But I'll tell you what, Eichel's getting paid like a great player. At $10 million a year, he's getting paid. He's getting paid as a great player. And I'm just not sure he's there. You know, I've seen him play live. I've seen him play enough to know that he can be very good. I mean, he has an unbelievable shot. He has great vision on the ice. But he has baggage, Bob. And that becomes, if you're a manager in this league, the other 31 teams, I think you have to look at it and say, okay, it can, for $10 million, I'm getting this guy. His potential is there. But is his attitude there? How healthy is he? I mean, I'm not even sure if I'm a manager, I can get access to those health records, about what's going on with his neck, and the disc issue. So I'm not sure it's worth any investigation, you know. Now he wants out. I think the Sabres want out from the $10 million. They're obviously rebuilding again. I'm shocked that there's this much activity and much interest in Jack Eichel, to move on, but I'm not giving very much up for him, and they want four or five pieces, that can help the Sabres now and in the years to come in order to make the trade.
Well, and ultimately we go through this all the time. This is what you want. You aim high, the selling team does. And then the question becomes, how much do you have to mitigate your desire? Mm-hmm. And is there a, you know, a commonality point? And then we get to analyze whether it was a good team for one, a good deal for one team or the other, or a fair trade. But I mean, it brings me to this point. Like, it's so hard to evaluate multi-layered trades. A trade for one guy and you get five pieces, which is what kind of what Buffalo wants. The easiest thing to do is to say, all right, who would you trade one for one for Jack Eichel? Who is his comparable player? It's not McDavid.
No.
Is it Austin Matthews?
No, oh, no, Bob. No, I wouldn't trade Matthews for Eichel. Not a second.
No, well, neither would I.
I mean, there
who,
are.
But who is that guy? Who's well, I the mean, guy that one on one we would sit here and say, well, it's fair trade for both teams.
Well, I mean, if you go through the list of who the best player on certain teams are, I mean, I'm not trading him for Artemi Panarin, for who plays for the Rangers. I'm not doing that. I'm not trading him for, you know, either. I'm not trading it for Brad Marchand in Boston, or even an older Patrice Bergeron. I'm just not doing it for a multitude of reasons.
All right, Kucherov.
Oh, not a chance, Bob.
No,
not a chance. Not a chance. I mean, you know, Eichel for Stamkos, maybe. Eichel for Stamkos, maybe. But both are at a, you know, and because the money's comparable. Because that's one of the things you have to keep in mind when you trade one for one. You have to figure out money wise. But both have in the last few years, Stevens has slowed down a lot.
Well, and has been encumbered by almost an endless string of injuries.
Yeah, but let's face it, Eichel has been encumbered with injuries now too, and that's part of the issue. You know, I look at a guy like Jamie Benn. And again, the money, Jamie Benn in Dallas, or Tyler Seguin in Dallas. Again, another injury-plagued guy with comparable money. And you're going, gosh, I don't know. I just think there's too many things. And there'll be managers that say, oh, no, Eichel's better, and Eichel can do this, and we're going to take a chance. The one thing Eichel has going for him is his age, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he drafted in 2015. It's 6 years, so he's 24, 25 years old, and is, you know, supposed to be getting right into his prime. But I'll tell you what, I just think between injuries, between attitude, and his attitude has improved, but his attitude was an issue at one point. You know, and it got in the way. It got in the way of previous coaches, guys like, and previous managers like Botterill and Bilesma. Jack Eichel to me is someone, if I'm a manager in this league and I'm sitting around my scouting table and we talk about it, I'm saying, guys, why would we take the risk? Because it's a risk. And I'm not sure it's worth anything to take that risk as we're trying to rebuild a team and a roster. I'm sorry. Kevin Adams actually said on the weekend, I wouldn't be surprised that Eichel's still on the Sabres in the fall. That might be the best thing.
I won't be the least bit surprised.
Yeah.
But then again, I have seen general managers make moves that you shake your head at, and they fall in love with a player. And they, I believe in hockey specifically, but in other sports as well. And maybe we as fans do the same thing, but wrongly, overemphasizing the potential impact of that high level player, of what he can, that he can magically snap his fingers and turn a franchise around.
Yeah.
I honestly, the NBA is the closest place where I think one player can have great impact. But the only other place I can think of is quarterback on an NFL team. Where a great quarterback really can change the fortunes of a team, almost regardless of who's around him.
Yeah,
maybe we're looking at the greatest professional athlete of all time in Tom Brady.
Sure.
And relating to that, and that's not fair. But
No, it's not. I mean, look at Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers took 3 years sitting with a clipboard before he got to that point.
Well, but that was as much circumstantial.
Sure, but I like, it's going to be interesting to see when you talk about that. Trevor Lawrence came out of college football with as much hype as anybody, even though that in his junior year he was injured. Or he may have been the sophomore year, but anyway, Trevor Lawrence won the Heisman 1 year and then didn't win it the next. Was injured. Strange year that's for Clemson that this past season going to Jacksonville. I'm not sure he's that going to be able to make that difference in his first year.
Oh, well, I don't think he is.
No, but we're not talking
about Jack Eichel in his first year. We're talking about Jack Eichel in what, his seventh year.
Yeah, but it's almost just kind of become a domino effect. He got off to a disappointing start, and he's never been able to, with flashes of brilliance, Bob, which every team now is salivating over if they're into it, about this guy. If we take the risk, is he the guy that's going to be a difference maker? Because that's what everybody's trying to find, right? Your point, they're trying to find a difference maker. And the question is that, are they going to take a risk? Are they going to take the gamble on Jack Eichel being a difference maker and mortgaging so much of their future?
Well, and therein lies the issue, is can you have an issue maker in the sport of hockey, given that they only play one third of the time, mm-hmm. and there are many pieces required to fill the puzzle. And McDavid is the perfect example. No one questions that he is the best and the most talented player in the National Hockey League, and he has had, to date, no success for his team. And he plays with a guy in Dreisaitl who is not that far behind him in terms of ability and skill set. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's not McDavid, but we all know that. But he's got a wingmate, as they say in the bar scene.
Yeah.
You know, and that hasn't materialized.
But this goes, and your point's a good one, because I mean, the issues in Edmonton are not about the Stars. They're about how do you surround them. And the issues in Buffalo is, I mean, since the Pakulas took over the team, give them credit. They have not been shy to spend money.
No, they haven't. But their management has made a bunch of blunders.
But the subjectivity of it, this guy's going to be a good player, this guy's going to be a difference maker. They've had bad judgment on players, pure and simple, bad judgment on players. I mean, Jeff Skinner makes $9 million a year. He had 2 goals last year. And there's no way that he should have got this contract. There's no way he should have got this contract. There's not. Well,
what does Taylor Hall make?
Well, Taylor Hall, when he signed in Buffalo, I think it was $8 or $9 million. It was, and he, for the single year, because he needed to prove himself and they needed to experiment. He didn't even last the season, Bob.
No.
Now he signed his 4-year deal in Boston for $6 million. But the hope was that Eichel and Hall would be the two pillars to get this team out of hock, and they couldn't. They couldn't. There's, it's such a frustration as for Sabre fans, because it's a really good hockey market. The fans are passionate. They love their team, and they keep banging their head against the wall because one reason or another. The quality of players that this team puts on the ice has not been able to match. And that's, I mean, Kevin Adams actually did a good job this weekend in my mind in trying to start the rebuild by trading Rasmus Ristolainen to Philadelphia, getting a first round pick, trading Sam Reinhart to Florida, getting a future first round pick. I tell you what, if I'm a season seat holder in Buffalo and they're asking me for my money for another year, boy, oh boy, oh boy, I'm starting to say, hey, listen, you gotta show me something to make me want to go back to that arena and me give you all that money. It really does.
We'll see what happens with Eichel. The Montreal Canadiens, raised a significant amount of controversy.
Oof, you think?
In the drafting of Logan, and I'm not sure. Is it Mayu?
I think you're right. Yeah.
Is how you pronounce it. And I can't imagine there's a single person watching or listening to this that doesn't know the whole story, but Mayu is playing in Switzerland?
Sweden.
And
he's supposed to play for the London Knights, but because the OHL didn't play, he went to Sweden to play.
So in a moment of grotesque stupidity and insensitivity, he videotapes himself and a woman in a sex act and shows this video to at least his teammates or some of his teammates
without asking her permission,
which of course she would never have given.
Right.
He is caught doing this. He is charged. He pays a fine. I think it was like $1,600 or something. Mm-hmm. But it has tarnished his reputation. He asks not to be drafted.
Right.
Which,
I mean, he I tell you what, visibly and publicly, he, since this has been made so,
he said all the right things.
He's done the right things, but you know, but he asked not to be drafted.
Yeah. Saying I have to reprove my character. I made a mistake, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And there's issues like, did he actually apologize to the woman? There's maybe yes, maybe no.
But well enough.
Let's put all that aside. At the end of the day, I think he was 17 at the time this happened. He's now an 18-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all know 18-year-olds who like to think they're smart are completely and utterly wet behind the ears. And you can take that both ways. But Montreal goes ahead and drafts him in the first round.
31st,
albeit late in the first round.
31st, yeah.
How big a mistake is that, or is it a mistake at all? Because, in fairness, you can look at this in two ways. You can look at it as a complete blunder and complete insensitivity, or you can say, well, the Montreal Canadiens, I assume, talked to this kid and believe him and believe his story and looked at it and said, okay, it's a 17-year-old who did a really dumb thing. But we think enough of his talent that, and we believe that we can assist him in figuring out his future existence. In your mind, was this a blunder, or was this a demonstration of generosity on the part of the Montreal Canadiens?
Generosity? No chance.
Well, I mean, they have preached that they are there to help the kid.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, you know, within 2 minutes of drafting him, they come up with a press release saying that they are going to help the guy.
Yeah.
So obviously this was premeditated. It wasn't as if, well, he's available, we better take him. I think on so many levels, Bob, this is absolutely, it's abhorrent what both he did and what Montreal did. You know, we see this every once in a while, this invulnerability that hockey players think they have, athletes think they have, that they're above the law, they can do anything, they don't have to, they're macho guys, and they can get away with it. He's obviously trying to backtrack and apologize over that. At the same time, I would tell you, I think Montreal almost did the same thing by saying, we're the Montreal Canadiens, we're going to fix this. Even after the player said, I don't want to be drafted. And the Montreal and Marc Bergevin said that we're going to take them and we're going to work with them and we're going to make it better, rather than respecting the social issues that they were creating by doing it. It's one of those ones where you in the draft room, and because, you know, they press released 2 minutes after, you know, it was premeditated. You have to wonder what kind of discussion went on behind the scenes between Jeff Molson, Marc Bergevin, the senior VP of communications, the HR, the president, the VP of HR, saying, what are we getting ourselves into here? I don't think Montreal, this is not a case of win or lose. But I think Montreal tarnished its image as a team that is on the rise by taking a player that A, didn't want to be drafted, and B, is damaged goods. I think they made a terrible mistake. And I don't think anybody's going to pay for it with their jobs. But I'll tell you what, they did not make very many friends on so many levels, not just in Montreal or the province of Quebec, but in the hockey world completely.
Well, you know, here's a point of view that I can't validate today, but I'm going to suggest that if this young man, and I'll be honest, I never heard this whole story about him until he was drafted.
Katie Sterling at the Athletic did a really good job with it. Frank Saravelli did a good job. Within the hockey community, it was a well-known story for 10 days prior to the draft.
If Montreal had honored this kid's request and the other teams in the NHL had done the same right through the draft, and there's no guarantee they would have, but the kid goes to London, is a good kid, plays well, and goes back into the draft as a 19-year-old, what kind of reaction would there have been? Would there be this much emphasis on what this young man did in Sweden?
Well, I'll tell you, next year's draft, there still would have been a reaction. Next year's draft, as a 19-year-old, and when his name came up, people would have talked about it. But he would have had a year to try to make amends. He would have had a year to try. This was just a silly mistake.
Well, the repercussions of this will last some considerable period of time, and it will be discussed over and over again. And maybe more importantly, this young player will be encumbered by this history for the rest of his life and certainly
absolutely
the rest of his hockey career.
Well, here's the other question, Bob. I mean, we assume that he's going to play in London. We assume he's going to play in the OHL. But we haven't seen anything from either the team or the league to suggest that there's going to be repercussions at that level. I mean, we've kind of castigated and said, Montreal, shame on you. But where's London in all this? Where's the OHL in all this? Where's the CHL in all of this as they try to, you know, again, another blemish in a sport that's trying to, you know, create more, have more diversity, have more openness. That to me is that's the next step in this discussion is what are the Knights going to do? What are the Hunters going to do? And what's Dave Branch and the OHL going to do?
Let's take another break, and we'll come back and chat some more. Back after these messages. McCallum and Shannon with you for this Monday. The Toronto Blue Jays lose 2-3 to the New York Mets. They have now lost, I think, 4 out of 5. Mm-hmm. They have a 4-game series in Boston this week. They are, I think, 9.5 back out of first place, which is only in terms of relevance, doesn't mean that much. I mean, this is a team that wants to get in the playoffs. I think they're 4 games back of Atlanta for a wild card. Something, not Atlanta, Oakland,
right,
for a wild card. But we are now starting to, as we get close to the trade deadline, we're at least the first one. We're now, I think, in a position where a whole bunch of questions are going to be raised. Are we absolutely certain this is a team that should be adding? Is this a team that should stand pat? Or let's also discuss, should the Blue Jays, and fans are going to say this is impossible, but there are two significant players who have played very well for this team, of with whom nobody has any issue, in Semien and Ray, mm-hmm. who will be free agents at the end of this season. The Toronto Blue Jays have to make a decision as to whether to pursue these players, re-sign them. And if they're not going to, are you going to hang on to them for the balance of the season when you don't know if you're going to make the playoffs? I mean, this complicates matters tremendously. Thoughts on that?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that Ray and Simeon, if you can sign them, okay, if you can sign them, are they part of the, are they part of your future? Do you think they're cornerstone guys? Are they somebody, I mean, we already got the kids, you know, we got Biggio, Bichette, Guerrero. Are they in that group of foundation guys, even if you sign them?
The answer for me is yes, and without hesitation. And okay. And I'll tell you why. Semien is an extraordinary player, and a little older than the majority of the key players that are also on that team, specifically Guerrero and Bichette, but others as well, has transitioned beautifully, perfectly to second base. But if Bichette ever went down, you have a potential all-star shortstop sitting right there.
Yep.
Ray is one of those lightning in a bottle guys who show tons of potential elsewhere and in previous years, but couldn't throw strikes. And those guys like that who flash and then fade, there's millions of them. Ray has done what most of these guys can't do, and he's learned to pitch and pitch effectively. He is a hard throwing left-hander, and you cannot or should not undervalue the significance of that. Plus, he's really good.
Yeah.
Now, he's not a front of the rotation guy, but he's a number two or a number three without question. And those guys do not grow on trees. And the fact that they've got him, I think he's getting paid $10 million this year. Mm-hmm. That's a really good price. You won't be able to get him for that in a longer term deal, but because other teams will be salivating over the prospect of him. But I'm locking these two guys up.
I agree. I mean, you and I have touched on this before. I'm not concerned about this season as much. I'm not. I am concerned about next year and the year after and the year after, when these guys get to a mature level of becoming veteran players. And I'm not talking Simeon and Ray. I'm talking about the other three and whoever else is on this team. I mean, Jordan Springer is committed for a long time in Toronto.
Yes, he is.
And so this is not a, we're going to, if we don't make the playoffs this year, we're blowing things up. We're not blowing things up. We're taking this methodically. We're building slowly. We are going to be good for a long period of time. And I think those two guys, Simeon and Ray, are part of that. So therefore, the problem becomes, Bob, if Simeon walks in and says, I want $30 million. I mean, with his numbers, what number, what is he right now? I think he's at 18. I think he's at 18 million. What do you get? You want him? You want Ray? You said Ray's at 10. What number do you go to, Bob?
Well, that's sort of a trick question, because we are not in the business of determining what players can receive. Mm-hmm. That is Roger's prerogative, under the counsel and advice of their general manager and president, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we understand there's a budget. I don't know whether Simeon's a $30 million ball player. But I'm not immediately saying he's not. Mm-hmm. Is he an $18 million ball player? I think he probably is. Will somebody pay him $30 million? I doubt it, because he does not play a position where that generally is the amount of money that you pay that guy. And even though he hits home runs, he isn't a home run hitter. That's not what he's noted for. He's got a bunch. He's got well over 20.
Yeah.
He'll be a 30 home run guy. Second baseman who hits 30 home runs, they're pretty rare. Mm-hmm. And plays sound defense and hits for 290.
Yeah.
Those guys do not come along every day.
Okay, so now you're
maybe he is a $30 million guy. I don't know.
Right. And that's the real I mean, that's the frustration, I guess, that Ross and Mark are having right now is that, hey, listen, as good as he is, and we want to be part of the future, can we afford him? Can we afford him? And well, that I guess we're going to have to wait till we got another couple of days to figure that out, whether.
Well, here's the other part of this equation. And I know that there are people going to say this because they already have. And that is the Blue Jays system continues to produce prospects. And there are middle infielders in that system that that they like and who might be good. The problem becomes there comes a time where you have to fill the holes on your team with veteran players, players of some level of experience, in order to provide a level of greater consistency and to some extent guide the youngers through the process. I don't know whether to believe in that or not, but that's the consensus. I have a hard, if they have a young second baseman who's cracking the whip and ready to take Simeon's spot, I don't know who he is. Mm-hmm. There may be a guy that's 2 years away or 3 years away. I'll give you that. But there's nobody cracking the whip. So you're going to need somebody to play second base.
And it's not as if he's really old either.
No. Was he 28?
Yeah.
29, something like that?
Yeah.
And showing no, he hasn't had any health concerns at all.
No. The only thing I would say is, and this is, you know, after that first good year he had in Oakland, then the next year he wasn't very good. So he's come back and had a great year in Toronto. Can he maintain a level of consistency? Can he do it for more than 1 year? Is the real challenge. The Jays took a risk on Simeon for a year, and Simeon took a risk on the Jays for a year. And it seems to have worked for both sides, and hopefully they can come to some mutual understanding of what the next 4 years.
But let's be honest, this is a guy who was top five MVP voting. I think he was third. Mm-hmm. I think he's proven himself, and now he's had another good year back-to-back.
Yeah.
Forget everything else.
Okay.
The guy's done it more than once.
Well, I'm signing him, so.
I am too.
Yeah.
I'm with you. That's my whole point. Having said that, there still are needs. The bullpen is a complete and utter disaster. And your bullpen, there was a time where if you had five good starters, you could, and you had a closer, who cares about the rest of the bullpen?
You could muddle your way through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't, you'd let the starters pitch more longer. You'd try and get to the eighth or ninth inning rather than to the fifth inning. I mean, yesterday they took their starting pitcher out after 79 pitches and five innings. I'm sorry. With a bullpen that is Swiss cheese.
I was going to say, and with a lead.
With a lead, 3-1, yeah. I think, at the time.
It was.
And a bullpen that is nothing but Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
Who's your closer isn't reliable. Your closer isn't a premium closer. They've had premium closers in the past. Lots of them. You don't have one right now.
Yeah.
You have an if. They keep marching Dolis out there, and Dolis he's like throwing gasoline on a fire. He might be good, but you don't know.
Yeah,
he might be their number two bullpen guy right now. They pitch him like he's their number two bullpen guy. Mm-hmm. So you know how bad that bullpen is. And that's where you need help. And you also still need another starting pitcher. Because there's nobody on the horizon that you might bring up.
Yeah. Let me ask you this one. How much pressure, how much does it change when they come home? You know, they're going to play on Friday at the Dome.
Almost nothing. That is so overrated.
Okay.
Home field advantage is traditionally is 54%.
No, I'm not talking about the actual, I'm talking about the outside pressures to be, you know, there'll be more attention in theory, although the TV ratings have been very good for them this year. But how much is there, will there be more pressure even corporately for this group of guys to do something drastic?
No, I don't think so, because they're only going to have 15,000, you know, warm bodies in the building, not 40,000.
Yeah.
So economically, the impact is going to be negligible. They were drawing that many or more in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Now, maybe not at the same ticket price, but from an economic perspective, yes, there will be fewer costs. I'm sure that the organization has incurred significant cost in housing everybody in Buffalo and a bunch of other things. Yeah. So a lot of this will be a little bit, but we're talking pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
So, and is the team, do you expect the team to play better in this building?
I don't know. I think they're going to be, I think some of them are going to be shocked to be back on the turf as opposed to the natural grass in Buffalo.
Well, there's that, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they've been playing on grass fields.
Yeah.
So, and granted, this turf is not like the old days. It's not concrete anymore. But in any event,
I'm going to look forward to see you in the, I'm going to look forward to see you in those Gucci seats down there right behind home plate. I'm going to see them.
Well, you never know, but. I have sat there maybe once or twice in my life. I have.
Just stay off your phone, will you? If you're behind this, just stay off your phone.
Hey, I go to a baseball game. I don't, I'm not interested in anybody that's not in the ballpark. If I went, I'd be far more comfortable up in the press box or in Beeston's private box, but I don't think I'm, I don't know whether a podcast allows you to have access to any of that stuff anymore. So
if Beeston says he do it, you do, then you do.
Maybe. Maybe we call Shapiro, who we should be talking to soon anyway.
Yes, we are. We're going to talk to somebody soon.
Hopefully the producer can get on that.
He's lax these days. Just lax.
You mean kidding, pal. That'll do it for today. Yeah. A guest of some sort tomorrow.
No, we're going to talk basketball. We're going to talk all these rumors about Siakam. We're going to talk basketball.
All right. Would you like to tell people who's coming on?
No, I'm going to surprise them.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow. I would say same time, same station, but I'm pretty sure it's the same station. I'm not sure what the time will be, but
the great thing about podcasts is the time is when the listener wants to listen. That's the time.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for being with us. Bye.